Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us again. Another wonderful episode of There Is No Offseason in Store. It's Baseball Prospectus's only daily Dynasty podcast, proud member of the BP Podcast Network. Today, we're going to spend a little time talking about the newest update to Jesse and Brett's top 500 Dynasty rankings. We're going to talk about the risers. We're going to talk about the fallers. And we're going to talk about what in the hell is going on the offensive landscape in baseball today. And we're going to do so maybe a little bit shorter than normal, but you can tell by you can tell by the time code that we were probably unsuccessful. So we had the best intentions, I promise. But you heard his voice. With me, as always, he is compiled the top 500 Dynasty rankings, and we're going to break it down. So Jesse Roche, Jesse, what's up, buddy?
Not too much. I am on a little mini vacation at my in-law's beach house, and yes, it appears that the neighbor is mowing the lawn. So I will do my best to try and keep that background noise minimal. Like, there you go, if you can hear that. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about the top 500. It was a push to fully update it. You know, a lot has happened across baseball. We updated the top 500 prospect rankings last week, and now the Dynasty rankings overall. And there's a lot of movement up and down the rankings. And, you know, some people completely fell off the list. Some people rose all the way up from being off the list into the top 150. So it has been a big change. And, you know, in Dynasty leagues, we need to be prepared to adjust our valuation of players because, you know, what has happened in the past, while instructive, is not really what should be guiding Dynasty owners.
Sure. And just a quick admin kind of note about the list. I'm curious. Like, I know that there's tinkering throughout the season, and we try to get these out monthly at least, just because of how much things change on a day-to-day basis. But this one is usually a little bit even more of a bear with no data. And now we have a good month and a half, close to 2 months of data. How do you go about shuffling some people around? Do you use that March list as a template, or do you just kind of take note of people who are overperforming and then slot them in accordingly?
It's a very kind of a tedious process in which I go position by position, start with catchers, and just reassess each player one by one in terms of what I expect from them moving forward, what they've done obviously to date, and how all their performance kind of lines up with what I expected them to do entering the season and what I maybe expected them to do moving forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way I sort of rank it and rank players in general, at least from the hitting side, is I look at what kind of batting average to expect from them on average. You know, obviously it batting average in general fluctuates massively, but I look at batting average, I look at how many home runs or isolated slugging percentage to expect from a player, and mm-hmm. whether or not this player is going to provide any kind of contribution on the bases, and if so, how much. And then the big, I guess, more subjective, it's all a touch subjective, but the most subjective element of it is probably risk, which, you know, varies based on a player's age, injury history, current injury status and health status, and all a myriad of factors that kind of go into it. And even like the smallest tweak, you know, if a hitter all of a sudden drops from being projected to be like a 260 hitter to a 250 hitter, I mean, that can cause a massive fall and tumble down the rankings because of how the numbers line up. So it is arduous. I go through every single player, every single one, all the pitchers. Yeah. I look at every single pitch that the pitchers throw, and looking how each of those pitches are moving and performing, and their spin rates, and, you know, their run values, and the horizontal vertical movements. It's all, I go through it all. So it takes a lot of time and effort to go through it all, but that's exactly how I do it every single mm-hmm. update. So
that's really, yeah, that's really interesting. I have been meaning to ask you about that just because of, you know, you figure it's a painstaking process, and And that I think that that just probably goes to show anybody that wants to check out these rankings, you knew there was a lot of time going into it, but maybe you didn't know the degree of how just how much time was going into it. So that's why I always use these as a reference point. They're up now on the site. They just went up today. We're recording this on Friday the 13th. So yeah, check out the newest Dynasty rankings and enjoy and benefit from Jesse's hours upon hours upon days of tedious list making.
Yes, it's so hard. And meanwhile, Brett kind of jumps in at the very end of the process. Once I have the rankings complete, I send him like top 200 once that's done, and he will make notes on a few players, a select number of players that he wants to move up. Often it's the same players. He's constantly trying to get me to move up the rankings. For the longest time, that was Nick Madrigal, but finally, no pushback on Nick Madrigal falling down the rankings. That's how it works. And this takes a lot of time and effort. I've said before, it probably takes 30 hours of work to fully update these rankings. It's a lot. I mean, I could do it in a lot less time, but I want to make this as complete as possible and as up-to-date as possible, too. So, enjoy them. There's a lot of players that have moved up and down, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're my favorite rankings. They're the rankings that I go to when I'm looking at trades, when I'm trying to analyze what roster moves I want to make. Check them out on the site. They're up right now. And there was a little bit of movement in the top 10 that we can kick this off, kick off our discussion. And potentially something that's important when considering the movement in the top 10 is just how bad offense has been so far this season. Mike wrote about it yesterday up on the site. His article entitled "The New Context for Offense," and it's going over just how bad everyone is hitting. You made some notes on here about the numbers and the low points that we're hitting through the first month and a half of the season, the projected home runs, the pace. None of it's good, but it all is important when coming up with a list like this. And what do you notice, especially about the early offense that played the biggest part in your rankings for some of these guys?
Yeah, it is a dire time out there. I'm sure that if you played fantasy baseball or dynasty baseball, you know, you've seen it. We have the lowest batting average ever right now in Major League Baseball, 234 across the league. It's the lowest. I think that seeing this, you know, we've been seeing a trend down in batting average across the league for several years now, while power and strikeouts have also been going up, walk rates have been going up. Because average is dipping, we have to reconceptualize what kind of production we want out of hitters in, you know, especially in like standard 5x5 formats and roto formats. What kind of production is actually good for batting average? You know, a 250 hitter is all of a sudden, you know, pretty good in a standard 5x5 league. When before you were kind of aiming for 260, 265, you know, I think you can probably be pretty happy at 250. That said, you know, we are in the cold months. It's been a month and a half of baseball. You know, these players, you know, in 2020, they didn't even start in the major league season until July. This year there had been a shorter ramp up because of the lockout. So I think you need to practice some patience, and I've tried to show that within the rankings. I'm not going to ding too many hitters too harshly, but it does depend upon the hitter's profile. So someone like a Bo Bichette, who has been a disaster so far this year, he's dropping, but he's not going to maybe be dropping as far as you would expect based on his performance, because again, cold months, we have a long track record of performance. He's young, he's talented, and you know, once we hit later in May, June, July, the weather heats up, these players are going to heat up. You know, Juan Soto has been basically a historic slow starter. And yeah, he's hitting 260, but have you go look and see what he does in the months of July and August and September, because that's coming, and I would expect him to like explode again. So
yeah, Bobichette, as well. Like it's his. If you just look at his career splits, the March April numbers are significantly lower than every other month. They're like 50 points lower than the next lowest, which is 285 in May. So if you're looking at that as any sort of track record or guidepost, I think that they're maybe don't drop Bobichette and cut him loose just yet.
But yeah, in terms of the top 10, I think the two most notable movers into the top 10 that were out, Wander Franco, I've moved him up to fifth. Before the season, I thought that this is probably where he would be ending up at the end of the season, but it's pretty quickly he's moved to this spot. You know, part of it's because of, you know, Bobichette's struggles, you know, Trey Turner's struggles, Shohei Ohtani's inconsistent performance offensively. But also, it's because Wander Franco is really coming into his own. He's hitting for
power.
He's
that dude.
Yeah, he's the dude. He is a dude. He's hitting for power. He's stealing bases. He has 3 stolen bases already on a 15 stolen base pace. I mean, that's very promising. He's hitting for average, which we all expected. He's not whiffing, you know, 14% whiff rate. He's not whiffing in the zone. His zone contact percentage is among the highest in baseball at 92.5%, which, you know, we kind of knew that's what we were getting with Wander Franco, a high contact hitter. But I think that we're seeing the power manifest itself in games more, that the speed is playing on the bases. That's very promising, because I think the concern with Franco entering the season was that maybe the home runs and the stolen bases wouldn't quite be there. It would basically be, you'd be paying up for a lot of average, a lot of batting average, without the, you know, 5x5 production that you really, really would crave with a early pick. But, you know, he's bringing it. It's early still, but I think that a lot of what he's doing is incredibly promising. He's just 21 years old. I think that across all dynasty formats, you will see that he's almost like a locked in at like number 5. I think that you could see some people arguing that he's even higher. I think that it would be valid. That said, you know, I'm not touching that magical top 4 yet with Soto, Acuna, Tatis, and Guerrero. He's not quite there yet, but he has that upside. And yeah. You know, that's how special he is.
Yeah, I don't want to say surprised, because everything that he's done along the way has been incredible. And you're like, all right, well, maybe just somebody that's a prodigious talent is going to be prodigious all the way up. And I was a little pleasantly surprised, we'll say, about the early power. Nobody's really hitting well, and nobody's really hitting for power. And he's got 4 home runs already in the first 30 games. I wasn't sure if that would come this early in his career. Obviously, you would like to see some more walks eventually, but really complaining about something like that when he's still hitting 304 and not swinging and missing is maybe a little bit greedy at this stage of his career. And as he progresses, as he matures and pitchers get more scared of him, I don't think that he's like not disciplined. So I think that those will come as he gets older and more established in the league. But I think that there's an interesting case to be made between Franco and Vlad Jr., just in a sense that Franco might give you some steals. Vlad won't give you any. And if Vlad slips even a little bit with like the batting average and stuff, Wander Franco is right there. So it might be a 4A, 4B type, and all those guys are under 25, and I think that the young superstars are in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, in time. I'm not there yet. I don't really think it's quite there in terms. I mean, obviously, it's if Vlad slips. That's the premise. I definitely could see that, you know, because obviously Vlad has, you know, crazy power that Franco does not have. While Franco does have plus raw, you know, for sure, I think that he's not going to approach that. But I think Franco is probably the safest bet for batting average out there. and he's 21 years old. And so that is, you know, an incredibly valuable dynasty piece. And if, of course, he adds the power and speed and it continues to develop, that he legitimately has number one overall upside in time. I don't really think that's happening yet, you know, given obviously the talent above him. But I mean, my goodness, the sky's the limit with Wander Franco. The other player that has really moved up. You go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say I don't mean Vlad slips skill wise. I just mean sometimes you have those. Sometimes you have those seasons where things aren't going right, and he hits 270, and it's not quite what you were expecting. But yeah, I think just to jump in to or like to pass the baton back, the game is in good shape on the young end, and it's weird to introduce this person as not in the young end, but we have another new face that's an old face in the top 10.
Yeah, Mike Trout. Mike Trout's healthy, which is really the big thing for Mike Trout, right? A healthy Mike Trout hits. I mean, he hits. He's
still good.
He's probably the best hitter in baseball when he's healthy. And, you know, that's exactly what's happening. He's hitting 337, 462, 726 with 9 home runs, 25 runs, and 19 RBIs. I mean, he's back to being, you know, the godly player that we've known and love. It's, you know, obviously he doesn't steal bases anymore. You know, partly it's probably to protect his health. I mean, he's definitely still fast. He doesn't need to steal bases to be an impact fantasy player because he has one. He's a pretty consistent 300 hitter with probably the most power of any player outside of Byron Buxton in baseball that's playable in games in terms of game power. So, you know, Mike Trout is the man. So I don't really think it's too big of a surprise. Obviously, he carries risk. A lot of these players do, but you know, while he's healthy, you know, he's still 30 years old, so it's not like he's too old by any means. Mm-hmm. The talent's still there, so you know, ride it while you have it. And I mean, he's definitely performing like a top five player, so you know, he definitely warrants a move up.
Yeah, and I think that him, you know, now that he can learn from a guy like Taylor Ward. Or something
exactly,
along
right.
those lines, then he has a little bit. He has something to prove now, you know.
Or
now
lefty Anthony Rendon.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, 100% home run rate as a lefty for
right?
Rendon, which is pretty incredible. So maybe my favorite name on the list that we were wanting to touch on it just from an entertainment perspective is Jazz Chisholm. And he's gotten off to a super hot start with a 947 OPS in the first 105 plate appearances, 6 home runs, 6 steals, and has been doing a little bit better at making contact and not striking out so much. With this sort of power speed profile, he's already jumped a decent amount so far. How high do you think he can ultimately go? He comes in at number 20 right now, and there's some names up here. Once you're looking at the top 20, it's kind of the best of the best, like that top shelf level. How high can Jazz Chisholm go, presuming that this is an adjustment and a step forward for him?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of similarities between Chisholm and someone like Luis Robert. So I think that is definitely plausible that he can move into the top 10 if we see him continuing to hit. I think that a lot of what we're seeing with Chisholm is he's more or less the same player he was last year. He's just mm-hmm. more consistent. You know, he's still whiffing plenty, right? His whiff rate mm-hmm. wasn't even terrible last year. It was, you know, 29%. It's still 29%. He's still chasing a decent bit, but not too bad. And he's still making contact in his zone. I mean, it really isn't much of a change in profile. He's just making far more consistent contact, more consistent quality contact, and you know, he's getting to his plus raw power in games like every single time. And you know, obviously the speed is huge. There legitimately is 30-30 upside with Chisholm. I mean, there always has been. It's about how much consistency he would find at the plate. And, you know, he is aging up. You know, he's 24 years old. You have to expect that as he continues to age and mature, that he will become more consistent and make those gains. So, you know, he is definitely one of the most exciting players in baseball. Fun player to watch, like you mentioned. And, you know, I think that Luis Robert type production, obviously Luis Robert has been beset by injuries his entire career. I think that is definitely within Chisholm's, you know, range of outcomes.
Sort of an aside for Chisholm, I caught his appearance on the CC Sabathia podcast sometime last year, and just you get struck with how, yeah, he's got, you know, the blue hair and he's got like the flashy antics and celebrations, which are awesome. But the thing that struck me maybe the most is he was like, yeah, you could do all that stuff if you put in the work beforehand. And I want to go up and try and turn around a 98 mile an hour Jacob DeGrom fastball. Like, I want to be that guy. And the only way that I can do that is by putting in the work and trying to get better and all that stuff. And it's anecdotal, like, sure, but it gave me confidence that this is somebody that's not going to just be like, all right, I'm here now. So, like, everybody kind of look at me. Like, it's sort of a, I'm going to talk my shit, but it's because I know that I am working harder than all the rest of you guys.
And, you know, I mean, it isn't just that his, batted ball profiles changed all that much. It has changed a little bit. You know, he is putting more balls in the air. His average launch angle has doubled from 9 degrees last year to 18.8 degrees this year. He's hitting far more line drives, you know, putting a lot more fly balls, 8% increase in fly balls. He's made 0% weak contact so far, and he's pulling a ton more, 52% pull rate versus 37% last year. So if Chaz Chisholm's joined the, you know, lift and pull revolution that has, you know, transformed the state of the game, that's a big deal too, because that maybe means that we're going to see the big power that he's showing so far being something that is going to continue moving forward. And it gives a legitimate shot for 30 home runs, maybe more for Chisholm.
Yeah. And if you're going to do the lift and pull, method and pair in some, like, a consistently hard hit rate, like, that's just that, I mean, that's the recipe for those 30 homers right there. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Jazz Chisholm, and, I would love to see him continue on that path, because he's just a lot of fun, man. Also a lot of fun is also, and also in Florida, Shane McClanahan has sort of wrestled the I'm the ace of this rotation in Tampa, and I don't know that it's necessarily close, even though they have some good, you know, pitchers, obviously, and they have some on the way. But Shane McClanahan has been incredible this year. He's getting whiffs more than, like, most other guys. The 17.5% swing strike rate, one of the top marks behind, it looks like, is behind only Kevin Gausman and Corbin Burns for starting pitchers. And he pretty much took the foundation that he had last season and has supercharged it. How real do you think it is that he's going to be capital letter ace moving forward?
It's real. It's very real. He's up to the fifth starting pitcher in the rankings update, 29th overall. I wrote about him in the Dynasty Standouts article that I did last month. And, you know, I'm very much in on what we're seeing right now with McClanahan. Notably, you know, his stuff has taken a step forward. And I wrote about this in the article. You know, his fastball velocity is up. Its shape is better, even though his fastball is arguably his least successful pitch this year. The biggest change in his profile has been his changeup. His changeups all of a sudden become, you know, a plus-plus offering with more separation, more vertical movement, and more horizontal movement. You know, it now has almost 10 miles an hour separation from his fastball. It's become a huge bat missing pitch. His changeup has listed 52.8% whiffs. It's been a wild, wild offering. And then that's huge for a lefty because, you know, left-handed pitchers who have great changeups can thrive in the major leagues because they can throw those changeups to right-handed hitters all the time. It's very different from, like, a right-handed pitcher who has a great changeup. They need to have a great breaking ball to support it because they are facing a bunch of righties, and righties can hit right-handed changeups better than they can left-handed changeups. But besides that, you know, he still has those two awesome breaking balls with a hard slider that's in the upper 80s and his big two-plane, you know, curveball in the low 80s that also, you know, generate consistently over 40% whiffs. So those three secondaries, as in the emergence of his changeup, have really pushed him way up into that top five tier. And, you know, there is legit upside for McClanahan to, you know, challenge Corbin Burns for first overall by the end of the year. I really do believe that. It's if his fastball command can take a step forward and he can, you know, not maybe, you know, manage contact on the fastball a bit better, then he really could explode even more than he already has.
It's pretty crazy. You hit the nail on the head with the changeup. Like, he didn't really even throw it that much last year, just 8% of the time. That has more than doubled this year. And last year, hitters hit almost 400 against the changeup. This year, zero hits, which I think is pretty good if you're looking for, you know, not giving up runs and stuff.
Oh yeah, it's pretty good. You know, his his weighted on base average, WOBA, is 0.000 for his changeup. That's really good. Really good. I mean, his command of the pitch has just improved dramatically too. It's just, it legitimately is a plus-plus pitch now. And to pair with his fastball, which, you know, has plus-plus markers, he just needs to, it's still just getting hit a bit too much this year. If that can improve, man, legitimately could be the number one pitcher in baseball by the end of the year. But I mean, again, check out that article I wrote about McClanahan, you know, a few weeks ago. It talks about a lot of this as well, along with a lot of other players that are big risers in the top 500.
It's pretty incredible to look at the list and be comparing McClanahan to the, be like, all right, well, would you rather have McClanahan? And then you look at the couple names above him pitching wise and it's like, or Brandon Woodruff or Garrett Cole, and you're like, that wouldn't have been even a question really just 2 months ago. And now I'm wondering, like, would I trade Garrett Cole for Shane McClanahan? I would think about it. Depends on contention window and everything, like all the dynasty caveats apply, but I would think about it. And that's how good McClanahan has been. And how much the changeup, for lack of better phrasing, changes everything. Like, it really does morph him into a completely different pitcher, completely different level of success plane. So we had talked a lot about Dalton Varsho heading into the season. He was one of the standouts for Pecota projections, and he was one of the guys that I liked in the sense that even if he didn't really catch a ton, he was going to play a lot. And that's sort of been the situation so far this season. Carson Kelly goes down, and so Varsho is getting a little bit more run behind the plate, but he's, you know, he's hitting for some power. He's stealing some bases. He's pretty much as advertised what you would hope for, in a sense of he can put up some good fantasy offensive numbers in a landscape where those aren't really seen for fantasy catchers. Do you think that there's even a little bit more for a guy like Varsho? Because I think, you know, previously and in the minor leagues, he's hit for a little bit more average. I guess looking at catchers, you don't want to get too too greedy in what you're looking for, because he's already kind of the top of that list behind of fantasy catchers, which is not great. But I think that there might be even another level for Varsho to hit in his ascent to fantasy stardom.
I mean, I think so too. There's a reason why he moved way up the rankings, and you know, maybe in a month from now, where I have him at 52 won't look as good as it does right now. The thing that really has stood out for me for Varsho is he has 8 games catching this year, you know, in the first 30 games. Obviously, that's partly because of the Carson Kelly injury, but I think that gives you a lot of hope for him to retain catcher eligibility moving forward, year to year. I mean, all he needs in most formats is 20 games started behind the plate, and I think that's very reasonable to expect at this point. And if he can be, you know, a backup catcher that plays every day as a center fielder, or he's playing center this year, but you know, if anywhere. I mean, he's playing center. He's actually been a fantastic defensive center fielder, which I think maybe is the biggest shock of his entire season. You know, he's showing fantastic range in center. And, you know, that defense in center field will keep his bat in the lineup. And if his bat's in the lineup, you have an everyday player who's catcher eligible, who's going to get you 600-plus plate appearances. I mean, there are not many catchers that can do that in general, and it comes with, you know, power and speed, which is the big deal. And, you know, you mentioned his ability to hit for average in the minor leagues. I do think that his hit tool is probably pretty squarely around average in general. You know, he makes kind of average amount of contact. He chases an average-ish amount, and basically in general, everything's like a average or a touch below average, you know, touch borderline. And, you know, that's very consistent with what his performance has been. But I do think there maybe is another gear there. You know, if he could be a 260 hitter with 25, 30 home runs and, you know, double-digit stolen bases as a catcher with run production, I mean, that's huge, huge advantage you would get against other catchers. You know, I mean, especially considering that all the other catchers have been disasters this year. I mean, Dalton Varsho is far and away the top performing fantasy catcher in baseball right now. You know, we have Salvador Perez, who is seeing his whiff rate for an aggressive, always been an aggressive approach. His whiff rate has skyrocketed this year. You know, JT Realmuto has been basically powerless so far this year. So has Will Smith. So, you know, Dalton Varsho has shot up way above all those guys in terms of present performance. And I think you can project him moving forward to outproduce them as well. I think he's by far the number one catcher right now in Dynasty. And I don't think it's an overreaction to early performance, because I don't think this early performance is all that inconsistent with what to expect from him. The concerns we had moving into this, you know, before the season about Varsho was, you know, would he hit enough? I mean, he still does make some weak contact, doesn't hit the ball, doesn't make as much authoritative contact as you would like to see. But, you know, he is also, you know, pulling a ton this year too, like we talked about with Chisholm. He's always lifted, now he's pulling, he's getting to more of that power in games. And he does have legit pop. You know, this is a player that has above average raw power, and he's getting to basically all of it, and then some in games because of his approach. So while I don't necessarily think he's going to be much more than like a 250, 260 hitter, it shouldn't really matter if he's bringing, you know, power that should stand out the position, run production that should definitely stand out the position, and stolen bases, which, of course, stand out the position.
Yeah, and like he's the best option right now at fantasy catcher, and we're talking about these things, and it says as much about the position than anything else. Like if you just look at his stat line, none of it's gonna really jump out as, oh my god, is this sustainable? Like he's hitting .245. He does have the 6 home runs, the 3 steals. But none of this is really like, oh, well, that's crazy. There's no way he can keep this up. And catchers that don't catch are kind of my jam in fantasy, because that just means extra plate appearances. And like you mentioned, if he can just get to that 20 game threshold behind the plate, and he is well on pace to do that, he's going to be able to have that eligibility moving forward. And it's going to be hard to keep him out of that top two or three, maybe, if some of these other guys rebound. If not the number one spot at fantasy catcher.
Agreed. And, we have to remember he's also 25 years old. I mean, he'll be 26 in July, so you have years of production awaiting, hopefully. And, you know, he's hitting atop that Diamondbacks order. And, you know, I think that he'll probably stick in at the top of that order moving forward, too.
Yeah. So Dalton Varsho, good. Turns out that Pakoda may have been on this one. One guy that I don't know off the top of my head if Pakoda was in on, but I can only assume no, because I don't know who was really in on this guy before the season. Nestor Cortes has been incredible for the Yankees. He's on occasion breaking 90 miles an hour, but somehow is still just stifling hitters, and it's been working to the tune of a almost 34% strikeout rate, and not allowing basically anything out of the park, which is a feat in Yankee Stadium. What sort of sustainability do you have for Cortes in this profile?
It's definitely been a unique start to the season for Cortes. You know, he's missing tons of bats. Obviously, he was fantastic last year. How much of that was sustainable was a little bit questionable. But, you know, he is a pretty standard lefty with that doesn't have a ton of velocity, but relies on, you know, a depth of repertoire and a lot of deception. I mean, really, deception.
Are you saying he's a crafty lefty?
He's a crafty lefty. I think Andrew McCutchen said on Twitter that he said that because of the way in which Cortes disrupts the hitter's timing, it looks like his fastball comes at you at 97 miles an hour, which is, you know, understandable. I mean, as a pitcher, you really need to take advantage of, you know, everything you can possibly do to get your stuff to play up. And he really has. And, you know, while his fastball is only 90 miles an hour, and it has a perceived velocity of 85 miles an hour, so even less, because he gets no extension because he's not a big guy, you know, it still is very effective pitch. You know, opposing hitters are, their weighted on base average is only 260, which is, you know, fantastic for a four-seam fastball. It has a lot of carry. He has great command of it as well. And, you know, but the big standout for him is his cutter, which is a, you know, mid-80s pitch with a lot of depth. And for a cutter, a lot of horizontal movement. I mean, it's almost akin to a slider, but not quite. Because it's such a unique pitch, it's really just flummoxes opposing hitters. And again, you know, very good command of that pitch as well. And he does mix three other pitches in, including a more traditional, well, not traditional necessarily, but a slider in the upper 70s that has huge two-plane movement, and a, you know, a changeup that he occasionally throws as well, and he does occasionally throw a sinker. But in general, it really is that four-seamer and cutter that are just rocketing through hitters. I do not think it's the most sustainable profile, personally. You know, those pitches do not miss as many bats as his strikeout rate, you know, implies. In general, his whiff rate this year is very much average-ish. It's 25.4%. League average is 24.6%. So it's close to league average despite his huge strikeout rate. I think the strikeouts are almost certainly coming down. So I don't know. I think he's a great player to sell high on. Obviously, he's moved way up our rankings. I do not think he's has any chance to be a top 100 dynasty player at any point. Right now, Cortes ranks, let me pull that up. He ranks at 221. I think there's a chance he could be a top 200 player soon, but that's basically what I think his peak's probably going to be. Just because the stuff, you know, is just not great. And his command's not like fantastic either. So again, a player to sell high on right now.
Yeah, there's not another level to Cortez
Oh,
because
no way.
I don't know where you would even go to find that. He's the numbers, the ERA, 1.41 ERA, like these are not things that are going to continue. That's not to say that he can't be a serviceable fantasy option and a great real life pitcher. Like he's already proven that he can do that. Going back to last year, I think that you just need to temper your expectations on what you're getting with Cortez. And I think that it would be really hard to move him if he's on your roster because people would be looking at this and saying like I think that you're trying to sell high, so I will only give you X. It might be a hold situation in for me just because I don't necessarily like I think that he's good and he has been good this year. So I don't know if it makes sense if you're a guy if your team is competing and you're trying to do well this year. I don't know how much it makes sense to move Cortez because I don't know if what you're getting back is going to help you as much as he will this year. It wouldn't be Tino if we didn't talk about some beefy boys. And there are a couple that have been movers so far in the top 500 dynasty. And of course, I'm talking about Rowdy Tellez and Josh Naylor. I don't know where you want to start, but I think that these two definitely deserve a mention. And since you put the list together, it'll be dealer's choice. Do you want to talk about Rowdy or Naylor?
Let's talk about Rowdy. He's ranked higher. He's jumped into the top 200, and for good reason. He's hitting the snot out of the ball. His barrel rate is 20%. He's always had huge power, but he's getting to more of that games for the first time this year, really. I mean, he flashed a little bit. He's flashed at times, but he's, hitting for power in games. He's playing every day for the Brewers. He has a very favorable home park, and it's not like he's empty his power without hitting ability because he's always had a touch of hitting ability. He makes plenty of contact, and he has a sound approach. So, he's a player who legitimately has even more potential movement in him. He could be a player who jumps close to the top 100 and enters that tier of first baseman with players like Josh Bell and CJ Cron, and he definitely could be in that group very quickly because the power and hitting ability are both, legitimate, especially obviously the power.
Yeah, and I thought that he was going to be a guy that was on the front lines of the NLDH lobbying committee, but he hasn't really been the DH all that much this year. He's pretty much been the everyday first baseman, and they've been shuffling that DH around in Milwaukee, and I don't necessarily think that there are too many. We've noticed Keston Hira has been MIA. Like he had a really good night last night in AAA, but he hasn't really done much to assert himself and even get into a platoon role at first base. So I think that Tellez is just the guy now. He's gonna play every day as long as he's healthy. And yeah, I don't even necessarily think that he's gonna need to DH because he's kind of the guy. I don't know if there's gonna be any average, but there will be home runs, and he's going to have enough reps. And the Brewers have been decent enough in offense to he won't kill you anywhere as far as the counting stats. So I'm a fan. I may be a little bit partial to the next guy we're gonna talk about just for reasons, but. Taliz is real, and I think that he's going to be a mainstay in that top, 12 to 15 first base eligible guys moving forward.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, this player that I know you want to talk about too is for sure a beefy boy, a player that was a former first round pick. It's been a long journey for Josh Naylor to
Yeah.
really truly maybe find his footing with the Guardians, and whatever the Guardians are doing is working for all of these hitters this year. Everyone's hitting on the Guardians, just about. And
Doesn't make a ton of sense, if
yeah.
I'm being honest.
But Naylor has always had the ingredients to be a successful major league hitter. He has legit pop. It never has played as much in games as you would expect because he often favored contact over power, and a lot of that is sort of similar this year. He's not necessarily putting everything in the air, but he does have 5 home runs already. He's hitting 347, 377, 611. There's legit, plus raw power or better, probably plus raw power in that bat. But it does play down in games. But if it could be above average game power or even average game power, and if it can come with his, hitting ability, which is legit, he makes tons of contact. His whiff rate is just 17.4% this year, and over his career, it's just been 20.4%. So if he can get to the power in games and continue to make tons of contact and, show a strong approach, I think he legit is here to stay too. And we moved him. I moved him up into 299, I believe. So he's up in the top 300 now. And when I did that, Brett's comment was yes, basically like fully on board. Brett's always been a big believer and champion of Josh Naylor. So the fact that Naylor is here and producing is a big deal. That said, I do still have some concerns about Naylor because he does sort of he sort of is a hit over power player, and he hasn't put enough balls in the air to really take advantage of that power. Even this year, even in this huge power outburst. So I think the power is probably going to come down unless he can his approach changes. And obviously we haven't really seen an approach change at all from Naylor throughout his career. So that said, if he could legitimately be like a 280, 25 home run hitter even without a huge an approach change because he has that talent. And I think he's going to get the opportunity in Cleveland for everyday playing time.
Yeah, and I think that it's also like a 29% home run fly ball rate seems tough to sustain for somebody like this. But we talk about improvement, or you look at some of the numbers and you're like, man, I wish he would hit fewer ground balls. And these small samples, small samples apply, especially to Naylor, who hasn't appeared in as many games as some of the other guys we're talking about. But the improvements seem to be incremental. He's hitting fewer ground balls. He still hits too many, but he's hitting fewer than maybe he did previously. He chases too much, but he's chasing a little bit less than he did last year. He's making a little bit more contact, a little bit more contact on pitches in the zone. And so while none of those are, necessarily the best numbers on their own, they are small improvements to what he has been doing previously. And I just want to point out that if you prorate his numbers across the full season, he is on pace for 178 RBIs. So, there's that Josh Naylor RBI machine, move over Hack Wilson.
Same thing with Telez. He is 27 already. Yeah, wow, 22 RBIs for Naylor is just wild. But hey, Cleveland, man, they've got some kind of magic going on over there right now.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense, but I will just keep my head in the sand and not really dig too much into the hood. At least we have Austin Hedges holding it down with the 169, 224, 254 line. So that's a little bit more what I know and love as far as Cleveland hitting is concerned.
If Austin Hedges somehow starts to hit, Cleveland needs to get investigated because something's happening.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So we talked about some of the fun stuff, which is the risers, but there are quite a few fallers as well. Perhaps most notably Shane Bieber. He has just not been, he's been fine. Like, and fine when you're talking about a great, a ace level guy that has been awesome previously is not what you're looking for. The velocity's down, the strikeouts are down. It's just not looking great for Bieber. All of the red flags that portend to something a little bit more sinister in the near future, they're all there. So I'll rephrase this. What's the biggest red flag for you so far on Bieber?
The fastball. You know, the fastball velocity is down over 2 miles an hour. And it was already down last year. You know, it's down 2 miles an hour from 2021, you know, back when he was a superstar in 2020, 2019, you know, his fastball velocity in 2020 was 94.1 miles an hour. It's at 90.6 miles an hour this year. The shape on the fastball, you know, is terrible right now, and it's getting rocked. And, you know, without his fastball being a meaningful offering, and, you know, the reduced velocities impacted all of his other pitches, you know, in particular his cutter and slider too. Those two have definitely suffered from this velocity dip. You know, he's really, you know, the only real pitch that's working for him right now in any meaningful way is his curveball, and his slider in a way. And, you know, that's just not going to cut it. And, you know, honestly, I dropped him to 69. You know, that may be not even far enough, because there's a lot of concerning trends happening. His strikeout rate at 21.5%, it's 11.6% less than last year. And from 2020, if you want to go into that, you know, Cy Young award winning season, it's almost 20% less his strikeout rate. Yeah. It's not looking great for him, you know, because his stuff really has dipped in a meaningful way. And, you know, given that it had dipped at the end of last year following his injury, you know, I think that most people are believing that there's something wrong with him. And that there's a legit potential for, you know, some kind of corrective surgery or something that has to happen. And, you know, like you said, he's been fine. But, you know, if this is what he is now, he's got to fall even further. Like, he's not a top 100 player if this is what he is. He might not even be a top 200 player if this is what he is.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the pitches that are just underperforming. The expected batting average on his fastball is .355, expected slug .613. Some of these numbers are just, like the expected slug on the cutter right now is 1,021, and hitters are actually slugging .900 against it, so that's not, you know, that's not all that comforting in itself. There's something wrong. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, this can't all be sticky stuff. I think that I would be kind of monitoring whether you could trade him. I don't necessarily know if that would even be possible. I think, like you said, where he's fallen to 68 on this update, and he could fall lower. If you can get top 100 value for Bieber, I would probably do it at this point, because it looks like there is something wrong, and that's the only way. So there's either something wrong or he's like bad now, and those seem to be the only two options with how significantly a lot of the numbers have dipped since forget 2020, but even 2019, 2018, when he was just starting to come up. Like, it looks bad.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is technically a third option, which I would probably suggest for a lot of pitchers, maybe not Bieber, is that, you know, it is the cold weather months, and, you know, pitchers' velocity in general is down for most pitchers early in the season, but this is extreme. And this isn't just limited to this early stretch. It was last year too, at the end of when he returned from his injury. So Yeah, I think it's time to, if you have Bieber, it's time to really explore trading him and convince people that you're selling low by getting a top 100 player that, is like, not a top 50 player, but between 51 and 100, and you might be able to convince another player, another owner, that you are selling low on Bieber, because he's performing okay and he's been a stud before. So I'm just very, very, very concerned.
And for what it's worth, his career splits, the March April strikeout percentage is his second best. He's only has a higher strikeout percentage in August of the career months, which, is whatever as far as career numbers go, but it's not, it's like you said, it's concerning. It's a bummer as somebody that likes to watch Prime Bieber and even a notch below Prime Bieber for the Guardians. Yeah, it's a bummer.
And I'll note, another player who's seen a velocity dip that I'm concerned about is Robbie Ray. And Robbie Ray was a player who I, was actually tempted to drop even further. He dropped 60 spots, which is substantial. He's 30 years old. He's a two-pitch arm, which I think is the most concerning thing. When velocity, he relies on power to win, right, as a pitcher, because he had a mid-90s, 95 mile an hour heater, upper 80s slider that often would touch 90 miles an hour. Those are both down 2 miles an hour. Without that huge velocity, he's not going to miss bats. And because he doesn't have any other pitches, it's those two pitches are bust. And when those two pitches are not as effective, he's in general just going to be far less effective. So I'm very, very concerned about Robbie Ray. I think that he's been fine in general. 4.22 ERA, 1.17 WHIP. So in general, he's been okay. But this is scary, and I think it's time. If you can sell him, sell him. It's time. I even if the velocity will rebound some, which hopefully it does, I think that this is for a 30-year-old. I'm just that has had a history of, command issues, that only has two pitches, that relies on, power to overpower opposing hitters. It's very huge red warning signs for Robbie Ray.
Yeah, and I wrote about Robbie Ray before the season as somebody to avoid, and a lot of it has to do with I'm always wary of the guy that breaks out. After kind of revamping himself with an organization and then going somewhere else, like I think that it's sometimes that can be hard to replicate, especially for a going to Seattle who hasn't necessarily been a haven of starting pitching development success so far. We'll get to, I mean, actually, I don't know if we'll get to George Kirby, who was awesome in his debut, as an example of a successful development story. And again, it's only been one start, so maybe we won't say that he's been a successful story, but he was good, and he's been good throughout the minors. I think that there will be some more strikeouts in store for Ray. He still has an above average swinging strike rate. It's not where it was last year, but last year was incredible, obviously. Yeah, like you said, I wasn't necessarily on Ray just because I thought that his value was based on the best season of his career by far. And I think it's really hard to expect that, even if he's an improved pitcher, it's hard to expect that level of success moving forward. I think that I would, like you said, I would gauge the market to see if there's anybody that still is a pre-2022 Robbie Ray, like has their value set to before this season. Otherwise, I might hang on to him just because I think that there will be some strikeouts that are coming in the near future, and you might get a little bit of a bounce back, and then you could move him. Or if he's trending closer to 2021, I'm not necessarily sure that's still in there. But if he gets closer to that, then, you know, he's hopeful to you in the short term. So I'm a little wary long term, but I think that in the near term that there will be some bounce back. And maybe that'll be a better time to move him if you can't get what you think is good value. Another name, another arm, I should say, that is coming back from injury is Mike Clevinger. He's been a little tough to watch as somebody that paid close attention to him coming up. It's hard to draw much from the first few starts back from Tommy John, but post Tommy John, Clevinger is looking a whole lot like early big league career Clevinger, where he's going to strike guys out, but he's going to walk a ton of guys, and the ERA is maybe not what you're looking for. Are the injury concerns and his production coming off of that huge layoff, in addition to a little bit of down velocity, which you don't necessarily always expect coming off of Tommy John, is that what's given you the most pause on Clevinger and pushing him down on the list?
I'm most concerned, you know, I'm not as concerned about the velocity because it was back a bit in his last start. It was really down his first start back, and it was down the minor leagues, but it was back a bit last start. I'm more concerned about the command, which is something that does take time to come back from Tommy John surgery often. And I'm also concerned about his fastball shape in particular.
Okay.
One of the reasons that he kind of like took a huge step forward was because his fastball shape improved dramatically. And his fastball has really backed up in terms of it's backed up to his pre-breakout type of shape. And I'm just, you know, it'll be something to monitor, but I think the command, the fastball, and how much quality it will be. And, you know, his age, you know, he's getting older. He's, you know, 31 years old. He'll be 32 at some point this year, I believe. And, you know, I'm just really not super keen on him. I mean, part of his fall also was just because there's been so many pitchers that have really popped early this season. So, you know, part of it's just he's falling down the pitching rankings in general because there's just other players that I prefer from a long-term standpoint at this point. Clevinger still has arm talent for sure, but you know, the player that you need to monitor with in terms of, you know, how his command continues to make progress this year and how his fastball's looking.
Yeah, and I don't think he's ever been confused for an elite command guy. Just watching him a lot of the years, like when he was good, it was improved, but I don't think it was ever like incredible. So, that's something where maybe if you can go trade for Clevinger right now with somebody that's a little frustrated with his start out the gate, and hopefully you get in on the ground floor, but you also have to wonder if, you know, I don't want to say it's over for Clevinger, but he's just not in that elite company anymore.
Yeah, and I guess touching really briefly on a couple of players, I'm sure that a lot of dynasty owners aren't quite sure what to do with. Akil Baddoo and Michael Conforto, both of them have fallen substantially, of course. You know, Akil Baddoo has had a terrible start to the season, got demoted to AAA. You know, if you're in a league that does not permit you to move him to like a minors slot and you have to keep him on a bench and the bench spots are limited, he's a drop. I dropped him in a 16-team dynasty league, for example, because I could not move him into the minors and I just didn't want to carry him on the bench. I just wasn't okay with it. I don't think that his upside is worth holding unless you're in deeper formats. You know, if you're in a 12-team league, I think he's close to a straight drop unless you can move him to like a minor league designation. And similar with Conforto, obviously he's out. He's not going to be playing at all this year because of his injury, because he hasn't signed. And even before the injury, he was not great for the last couple of years. So, you know, he's a guy that I think by the time he's back, he's going to be 30 years old. It's time to move on in most formats as well, unless you're in deeper formats, obviously as a hold, because he's another guy who has to occupy a bench spot. He can't even go on the IR because he's not on the team. and, you know, having Conforto on a bench, being just an auto-empty player there, it's not something that I'd be okay with in most leagues. So both Bedu and Conforto are drops in a lot of formats. They are still ranked because this is presuming you can roster them outside of just strictly on your bench. And, you know, if you can't, if you have to keep them on the bench, you should drop them both. And speaking of, that 16-team league that I've referenced, that's a dynasty league, also had Conforto, and I dropped him a long time ago.
I think of the two, I would be more interested in Bedu, strangely enough, because it's easy to forget that he, coming into last season, he had... that before last season, he had zero time above high A. He was a Rule 5 pick, so he hasn't really gotten the chance to refine anything in the upper minors. So maybe that could be helpful instead of just being thrown into the fire in as a big league platoon bat. But I don't necessarily think that the 2021 Bedu is coming back without some adjustments. I'm interested in talking about Trent Grisham quickly before we get out of here. He is another guy that's been pretty terrible so far this season, and I think that he's a clear case for he just needs to swing more. Like, the contact hasn't been great, and he's hitting a lot of ground balls, but I think that that's maybe partially due to him just getting deep in counts because of how patient he is, and maybe not getting a good pitch to drive to put in the air when instead opting for patience. Like, he swings 36% of the time. It's 11 percentage points lower than the league average. It's got to be one of the lowest swing rates in baseball. I think that he needs to be a little bit more aggressive, especially when you're struggling to this degree. I think that he should just swing the bat. Like, only four guys swing less often than Trent Grisham. And I think that could be helpful to break him of whatever funk that he's currently in. But I also think that when we all got kind of excited about his 2020 in San Diego, that might have been misguided in thinking that there could be a big step forward. I think that that is what he is. I don't think that he's going to be a big batting average guy. I don't think that he's going to be a big homer guy. I think that maybe he could get you a 15 homer, 20 steal eventually. But mostly I'm just looking at him swinging the bat right now.
I really don't have much to add there. I think that's kind of spot on. It is a plate discipline issue right now with him. And it's one of those situations where he's just way too passive. And, you know, it's to the point where he's missing a lot of hittable pitches. He's just not even swinging at, not even offering at. And, you know, while that's, we laud him for his, you know, approach usually, it's a mess right now. And, you know, before the season, I said that, you know, what caused his breakout was a lift and pull approach that he's drifting away from.
Hey, there it is.
Yeah, and, you know, he needs to do that. He needs to lift and pull, and he's just not doing it. And that's, he's not doing that. He's making too much weak contact when he does make contact, and he's not swinging enough. It's just a recipe for disaster. He's completely broken right now offensively, and, you know, and he's not even playing well enough defensively to justify it. I mean, I think he's a player who could conceivably get sent down to AAA soon. So just be prepared for something like that. If that happens, he's going to just, you know, he'll be borderline droppable in a lot of formats, just like Akil Bedu.
Mm-hmm. And like Bedu, he's not one that I would get rid of, or if you have the space, I think that there's more likelihood that he rounds into some some type of form. But if you don't have the space, I completely understand not wanting to wait and moving on. Any other just very quick hitters before we wrap it up for the week?
Sure. A lot of older players have been struggling so far. You know, Charlie Morton, Justin Turner, Joey Votto, Nelson Cruz, Yuli Gurriel. And I just kind of just goes to show that when you get older, your skills often decline. And, you know, when that happens in Dynasty, when these players fall off a cliff, their value goes away. It just like falls to nothing. And
it can happen fast.
It happens really fast. And that, while I'm sure many of these players will rebound in some shape or form, you know, if at this point, you know, that people are just not going to be willing to pay the premium they were willing to pay, not even close to, before the season. And it happens so fast in Dynasty. And the amount of teams that are willing to trade for these players are narrow. It's a narrow, narrow group of teams. And they can dictate terms because all these other teams that are either not rebuilding or looking to next year are just not interested. And that's a problem for rostering players like these. I mean, there's a lot of benefit, obviously, if they perform. But if they don't, their value just sinks. It craters.
Yeah, I've been dropping Justin Turner pretty much everywhere, and it's hurt. It's hurt my heart, but you know, he's been pretty bad, and I don't necessarily know if the Fountain of Youth will bestow him with, you know, a huge second half.
Yeah, and I guess just before we go, I know it's we at the outset we said this podcast would be a shorter one, but you also said that look at the timestamp because before we go, I want to just do a couple quick hit prospect notes. Corbin Carroll lately has gone bananas in Double A with lots of power. You know, two home runs and twice two home run games. I would be a little bit cautious in reading too much into his power production. Everyone is hitting for power for Amarillo. Their slugging percentage as a team at home is .599. it's just be cautious. You know, make sure you understand the context. Power, while Carroll has some pop, he's not like a plus power hitter. He's not going to be that. Don't believe that's going to happen. He's not going to be a 30 home run player in the major league level by any means. I just want to note that with Corbin Carroll, a lot to be excited about. And I would imagine he'll be moved to AAA soon now that Alec Thomas is up in the majors. And he'll be one of the younger players in AAA. So very exciting player, super fast riser. I definitely think that he has a chance to be number one overall once Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Wood Jr. graduate and Spencer Torkelson also graduates. So a lot to be excited about, but be a little cautious with the power. A player that is probably going to be, you know, very highly sought after his huge major league debut is George Kirby. I would also be a little cautious with George Kirby, mm-hmm. you know, because we've talked about him before on this podcast. He has a lot in common with someone like Logan Gilbert, where it's very much a fastball first pitching philosophy, where he has a big fastball, 95.8 miles an hour in his debut. It's not necessarily the most special fastball by any means. It plays up because he has good command. His secondaries, his slider, curveball, and changeup are not like super standout pitches. And so they need to make progress for Kirby to really take a step forward because all three of those pitches are average-ish. So just monitor him moving forward. I actually think if you own him in Dynasty, it's probably a great time to sell high because you might get like a top 100 Dynasty asset for Kirby. I think there's going to be some bumps in the road, much like Logan Gilbert. And I don't think he quite has the talent of Logan Gilbert, to be honest. So
I was going to say it's not a bad person to be compared to, especially with how good Gilbert's been this season.
Certainly. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about Kirby, but the secondaries still are, you know, just not quite where you'd want to see them for a player. I just don't anticipate him being a big strikeout guy, for example. A couple of very quick hits. Alex Ramirez is hitting everything in low A, and you should be excited about him. A very uber-talented player, you know, very projectable, has some speed, has some present power already, and, you know, he's making lots of contact. Got to be very excited about for the Mets. a couple pitchers that I'm personally very excited about. Gordon Grisafeu has been fantastic for the Cardinals in high A. He's very legitimate. He has a mid-90s fastball. He can touch like 98 miles an hour with his fastball. It has not the best movement, but it is paired with one of the best changeups in all of minor leagues. Huge depth, so much depth that it generates like 40 inches of depth sometimes. Awesome, awesome changeup. Misses bats with it, and you know his curveball and slider have taken steps forward as well. So his breakout is very legitimate. My favorite arm for sure from that St. Louis draft class. Grisafeu is a player who is a top 200 prospect and moving up. The last one is David Festa. I wrote about David Festa as a Statcast standout earlier last month, and you know he's been just even better since then. He had a no-hitter recently with 11 strikeouts over six innings for the low A affiliate of the Twins. He was like an 11th or 12th round pick last year, so probably available in basically almost every league out there right now. Mm-hmm. He has huge velocity, about 96 mile an hour average on his fastball, touches 98, 99 miles an hour, has good movement profile on his fastball, and he has two secondaries that he has good command of in terms of like a hard slider in the upper 80s and a changeup that he misses tons of bats with. So 6'6", projectable player. He came into his velocity late in his college career, and I think that part of the reason he fell was teams were not certain that the velocity gains were real. I think they are very real. He's going to be a player who jumps way up. He's in our top 300 now for prospects. I would imagine he's going to move up even more by the time the next update comes out. Yes, he's in low A. Yes, he's 22 years old. But his stuff is electric.
Get in early.
Oh yeah, you gotta get in. It's a David Festa, David Fiesta.
Oh yeah, Festa bad. Fiesta. Nope, that's the title of the episode. So you stay for aspirations of a quick one, and you stay long for a Festa Fiesta. So that's gonna wrap us up for this week. Check out all of Jesse's rankings. Check out all of our work at baseballperspectus.com, the fantasy side. And there's a lot of good stuff going on up there, so you won't be disappointed. If you have any questions, you want us to grade any trades, at Tino Podcast on Twitter, tinopodcast@gmail.com. We're available. We can break down some of the early season acquisitions if you wanted a second opinion. But otherwise, that will do it for this week. We will catch you next week with some more Tino goodness, and you guys are the coolest. Thanks for listening. Bye.